You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
A lot of people say they want to become spiritually enlightened. In fact, there's a bit of a push for that these days, by my observation. But what if we can be fed by spirit and the sacred every day in small ways as we go about the business of living? In some sense, we'd be spiritually enlightened every day, wouldn't we? My guest today was given some cooking recipes by her mother when she got married, and then later she realized that few of us pass down recipes for living, especially for sacred living. So being the kind of person she is, she wrote a book full of such recipes, and that's what we're talking about today, Recipes for a Sacred Life. Please join us in today's discussion. You can talk to me on either of our chats on Emotional Pro or the Blog Talk radio site, or you can call us toll-free at 888-498-0570, 888-498-0570, and that number will be posted on the chats. Rivi Neshama is a writer and community organizer. She holds degrees in philosophy, comparative literature, social work, and education. Her writing has appeared in such publications as Ms., Glamour, and the New York Times. And her spiritual path draws from many sources, Eastern and Western religions, native traditions, Sufis and shamans, elders, children, and her mom. Her website is Rivi Neshama, that's RIVVYNESHAMA.com. And that too is on the chat. So Rivi, welcome to Full Power Living.
Oh, thank you, Eileen. Thank you for inviting me, and I love being here.
Well, you know, when I read your book, Recipes for a Sacred Life, when I read it, I come away with the idea and the feeling that you believe that incorporating the sacred in everyday life is both a comfort and a joy, and that part of your motivation in writing this book was to share that comfort and joy with others. And I just wanted to start there and ask you, did I hear you correctly?
Yes, you did. You read me correctly. It's a comfort, it's a joy, and it's a way back when I'm in a dark mood or feeling unsettled or angry, that all of these so-called recipes are ways back to my center, back to feeling good, back to feeling part of the universe, connected, not disconnected. And yes, I wanted to share them, and I feel I've been fortunate that I've learned so many things and met so many wonderful people and read so many books, and that I kind of could distill it. And by passing it on in stories, I'm a storyteller, and the subtitle of the book is True Stories and a Few Miracles, that I think stories are a way that people get it and it stays with them, and they like reading stories.
Yes,
but that's fun in itself.
Definitely. Yes, definitely. So what is everyday sacredness in your understanding? When you're looking for the sacred in everyday life, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for connection. And it could be that I go outside and I take a minute to really look up at the sky and the clouds and their beauty and to watch them moving and just to say thank you to the clouds, thank you Great Spirit, you know, for this beauty. It could be sitting with my grandchild or tutoring someone to learn English and, you know, seeing what they need, what they want to do, being with them, laughing with them, learning with them. So it's connection with others, connection with nature, and connection with the divine.
So I had this thought as I was preparing for this show about whether sacredness, in your understanding, exists in and of itself, or like you say, do we imbue these connections and experiences in people with sacredness?
Mm-hmm.
Is sacredness a standalone thing as well?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good question. Yes, I believe the world is sacred, that everything, we're sacred, life is sacred, but it's when we recognize it, when we acknowledge it, and when we give thanks for it, that it kind of lights up and it becomes imbued and enhanced with its own sacredness because we're a part of it. It's like, the tree in the forest that until, if it falls and no one's
right.
there, it doesn't make a sound. It's kind of like that analogy that the sacred is here. It's everywhere. And when we see it, it's like, wow, a light goes on.
Mm-hmm. It's such a comfort. You remind me when my daughter, who's now 43, when she was 3, she kept waking up in the middle of the night and being quite distressed. And I had a very wise friend. And I said, what's going on with her? Can you help me here? And my friend said that she was feeling separate, that she was realizing that she was separate and that I should talk with her and let her know that nobody on the earth is ever totally alone because God is always with us. And now, we weren't religious per se, but certainly spiritual. And so I taught her to talk to God when she would wake up and she'd be frightened in the night. And I'd hear this little child in there going, God, I'm just a little girl and I'm scared here alone. I need you to help me. But it worked. It actually was the key.
Yes, and a lot of the stories in my book are, some of them are about talking to God in different ways,
right.
and some of them are about seeing that we're connected not just to people, but to trees and to birds and to stones and to plants. And one of my stories about a smile, how that, I think that's very important, to smile at each other, because if you walk down the street or if I walk down the street, and I see someone and they look strange and they look different than I am. And then I smile at them and their face just lights up with a smile. I feel an instant jolt of connection and I no longer feel alone.
Yes, and I love doing that when I think the other person least expects me to do it. You know? It's like, okay, we're not going to pretend, say a homeless person or somebody who doesn't
right.
really expect to be seen. What a
right.
what a gift that is to give them a smile. That's it's such a beautiful thought.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of my stories. Do you give to the ones who are drunk?
Go ahead.
If you want me to read any of the stories during
sure.
the show, I'd be happy to, by the way. So.
All right.
You just tell me when or which or whatever.
I didn't earmark any particular ones, but I tell you what, if we're talking about something and you say, I got a story about that, or I mention it, any one of them
mm-hmm.
that you'd like to read, I'd really like it. I apologize. I didn't pick some out. Often I do, but I didn't
do
this.
It's okay. Well, I can read the one I just mentioned. You give to the ones who are drunk.
There you go.
Okay. My son Tony, who lives in Manhattan, keeps some change in his pocket when he goes out walking. That way, he has something to give to the people he passes who ask him for help. Do you give to the ones who are drunk, who may use it to buy more beer? I asked. Yeah, he said. It's not for me to judge them or how they'll use it. You give from compassion to people in need. So now, when I remember, I keep change in my pocket, too. It helps me look forward to outstretched hands that I sometimes used to resent. In Judaism, giving to the needy is considered by some sages to be the most important commandment of all. It's called tzedakah, which often translates as charity, but truly means righteousness. It's simply doing what is right and just. Maimonides, a medieval rabbi and philosopher, wrote that there are 8 levels of tzedakah, and one of the highest is to give to the poor without knowing to whom one gives, and without the recipient knowing from whom he received. But something special happens when you're face-to-face on the street. It's a chance to really see each other and your shared humanity, and both giver and receiver end up feeling good. I feel especially good if I give with a smile and wish them good luck. Maimonides also wrote, even a poor person who lives entirely on tzedakah must give tzedakah to another. Which reminds me of our friend Julia Dean. Julia teaches photography around the world, but this story happened when she was a struggling artist in New York. It was a snowy winter day with a biting wind. Julia still remembers it because she walked home 40 blocks in the cold, not having enough money for a bus. I was 10 blocks from my apartment, she says, when a man huddled in a doorway held out a can filled with change and said, "Lady, you got any money?" It hit me that I didn't. I didn't have any money, and I started to cry. He looked at me and then held out the can again and said, "Lady, you need some money?"
Mm-hmm. That's so wonderful. You bring up the concept in that story of what I've learned as selfless service, and as you're trained as a social worker, as I am, for the last 41 years I've had a private practice, and one of the key things I ask people to do when their life seems to be all gnarled and messy is to do selfless service, to do something for somebody else without any expectation of return, as this man did. For your friend.
Yes. Yes, yes. And that's when people say, well, what's an easy way to feel my life is sacred or to feel sacredness? I'll say helping someone else. It could be just telephoning someone you know who's lonely and sick, and maybe you don't feel like calling, but you call. And you'll light up. They'll light up, you'll light up, and the connection's made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful. So you really are alerting us to the fact that we can find sacredness in lots of different places. And I wanted to ask you, in your experience, a lot of people talk about gratitude, but in your experience, how does gratitude build or connect us to sacredness?
How does gratitude connect? Well, it makes us aware, first of all, that something, some spirit, some purpose gave us all these wonderful things. That's one thing. So we're connected to the idea of a giver, that we've received these blessings. And they could be simple blessings. When we're really being conscious, we can just be grateful for the fact that our eyes are working. We can see that the sky is so beautiful and the trees are blooming. But something made this happen, and giving thanks, especially out loud, is acknowledging that and making that connection with the divine. So I think that's one way that comes to mind.
Okay.
Like gratitude, yeah.
A lot of people, and I find this too, just noticing what it is in your life that has been given to you. I mean, I think especially in our culture, we tend to feel like we have to work for things. And really, when you start expressing and noticing what you can be grateful for, so many of the things are just given. They're not things that you have to work for, like a beautiful day. It's just given.
Right. And then I think when we do that, or when I know when I do that, I start relaxing about, you know, before I was thinking, oh, God, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to promote this book, and vacuum. But when I start being grateful, I get into a different space. And,
exactly.
And then, yeah, and I can be grateful for, I like vacuuming, actually. It's kind of like selfless service, only it's serving me in the house.
Yeah, for but sure. Nobody notices most of the time that you've done it.
But you notice, and like the house notices. I mean, that's being connected to everything, being connected to your house and taking care of it or your garden. You know, you feel a little sparkle come off of it.
Uh-huh.
There is a thank you that I feel when you mow the lawn, that the lawn kind of says, thank you. I really needed a haircut. It looks terrific. You know?
Yeah. great. Well, you know, as I was reading your book, I realized that I don't think most people look at the place they live as a sacred space, but you do talk about our living area as sacred space, and even talk about making a sacred area of our living, our mm-hmm. home. Will you talk more about that? What are
yes.
some good ways to do that?
Well, I think the first way is just having that intention to realize this is your home. This is my home. Maybe you live there alone or you share it with someone else, but you want the home to be a place you feel safe and happy and that you have a sense of security and love and that you want to feel it infused with spirit, whatever that means to you. So you can start, well, some simple ways. I have a story on that one.
Good.
A sacred home. Would you like to hear that one?
Please, yes.
Okay. That's one I've never actually read out loud yet, so this will be a first. That'll be good, because now I have to find it. Okay. By the way, we both went to Berkeley.
Really?
But, yeah. And were you in social work school there? Or
yes. I went only half of my degree I earned there. The first half was at the University of Washington, and then it was Vietnam War time, and my husband got transferred, so I had to shift.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, actually, maybe I'll do the sacred space one. That would be more, that might be helpful to people. A sacred
okay.
space. The first time I saw a sacred space in someone's home was in the 1970s. I was visiting my friend Mary in Cambridge, and she said I could stay over if I didn't mind sleeping on a mattress on the floor of her meditation room. No problem, I said, for those were the days when I attended retreats at Zen monasteries, where the beds were so hard, I was almost grateful when the bells woke us up to chant before dawn.
I like that line.
No bells at Mary's, just a room that looked restful, soft white rug, the noted mattress, and some candles. The emptiness of the room was soothing. It invited me to empty my mind. But having a sacred space in your home doesn't require a whole room. It can evolve in a simple space. A bookcase, window, or corner can easily become the site for creating altars or tableaus of meaningful objects and images, ones that resonate for you. Larger spaces can become places to pray, meditate, or rest in if they offer privacy and quiet, at least some of the time. My sacred space is an alcove off our bedroom. I often pass it without looking, but once I sit down on the prayer rug, light the candle, and begin to meditate or do yoga, I forget the larger room behind me, and I'm back in my sacred space. I guess it's what I bring to it, my intention and practice, that makes it feel sacred. And by creating an inspiring environment, my intention and practice have deepened. Some people may already have a sacred space in their home, but not think of it that way. For my mother, it's her kitchen table, next to a wall of family photos. When things are troubling me, Mom says, I go there and sit. Then I have a cup of coffee and think things through until I'm feeling better. I never thought of it as my sacred space, but I guess it is. Other people find their sacred space outdoors, a bench with a view in their garden or a hidden grove in a park nearby. And some people, like our neighbor Brian Spielman, have enough space to create a dedicated shrine, a shrine room with Buddhist hangings, an uptown version of Mary's meditation room, cum mattress. Brian goes there to meditate or make offerings, and he goes there every day. You want the whole world to be your sacred space, he says, and it is. But we forget, so our sacred space is a reminder.
That's so wonderful. Thank you. We're up to our first break. My guest today is community organizer and author of Recipes for a Sacred Life, Ribi Neshama. And I'm going to be talking to her about her learning that emotions, negative emotions, leave holes inside of us whenever we return from this break. We're discussing how to find spiritual experience and the sacred in the gardening, in gardening and in emotions and in other areas of our life when we return. You're listening to Full Power Living.
Eileen Dillon is a certified senior life mentor with Accessing Universal Intelligence. She's available to conduct mentoring sessions with you to help you understand, change, and evolve using the advice of your own higher self. You can be anywhere in the world. Sessions are conducted through Skype. For more information about these life mentoring sessions, fees, and how to register, go to www.emotionalpro.com and click on the mentoring link at the top. Get personally tailored assistance with your toughest life questions. Visit mentoring@emotionalpro.com today.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements before we get back to our regular show. First, right after this show, you're invited to stick around for a special half hour from 10 to 10:30 with Sonia Rechnitzer, who's co-founder of Accessing Universal Intelligence and a fantastic mentor. She's going to be giving answers to your personal questions from your own higher self, just as we talked about on the ad just now. I've been studying with Sonia. And in this powerful and fast-moving half hour, you can get answers to your own questions about health, job, family, relationships, children, whatever is an issue in your life. And use the same toll-free number that's on the chat, 888-498-0570. And be sure to call right at the end of this show so you get yourself in line. Please also tell your friends and family about Full Power Living. You can subscribe to this series free on iTunes, and you can listen to recent archives on emotionalpro.com whenever you're free to listen. We want to thank you for helping us with our mission of sharing with the world the amazing and transformative power of emotions. Next week, Dr. Stan Tatkin, who is a world-renowned couples therapist, will be talking with us about neurobiology and the what we know about the brain and how attachment affects who we pick as our partners when we talk about love and war in relationships. So whether you're peaceful or not peaceful in your relationship, you'll learn something from Dr. Tatkin, I'm sure. My guest today is Rivi Neshama. She's a community organizer. And, you know, Rivi, one other thing I want to ask you about is your openness to learn. You studied philosophy and comparative literature, social work, education. And when I read your book, it's like every other story you go, well, then I was studying with this person, or I had an opportunity to go hear that person talk. And I was so impressed that you allow yourself to investigate whatever comes your way that has interest for you. And I want to ask you to tell us more about that part of yourself.
Well, I think that part of myself might not be as heroic as you made it. I think it came a lot out of a need, different needs to find answers, needs to find meaning, needs to deal with anxiety. It could be the general angst of living, existential angst. It could be my own anxiety. But a searching, I was propelled to do it, I think, to look. But yes, I'm open, and I like to, you know, move outside of my own neighborhood, my own barrio, you know, and see what the people on the other side are doing, what they're thinking, what that church or that temple or that mosque, you know, what do they believe in? And I was always attracted to Native Americans. I think if I did have a previous life, and someone told me, yes, I was a medicine woman, but I might just have been a Native American. I don't know if I were a medicine woman. But that led me very early to start studying their beliefs and their rituals. And it was all very fulfilling. I loved going to Catholic churches when I was a little girl. With my best friend Susie Souter was Catholic and I was Jewish, and the mystery of the church, it was all beautiful. It was kind of, you know, like as a kid I wanted to go to Willow Grove Amusement Park, and it was exciting, and something came alive. And that's how I would feel, you know, with these different teachers and the Zen monasteries, that I loved hearing the gong, you know, the bell in the morning waking you up. Someone would be walking through the hallways, bong, bong, bong. And it felt ancient. It was a wonderful feeling,
yeah.
Despite the hard bits. Yeah.
See, just listening to you now, there's an openness that you retained from childhood, you kept, that's really delightful. But speaking of Native wisdom, you talk about a shaman, Brant Secunda, who trained with the Huichol, who told you that the Huichol believe that negative emotions leave holes inside of us.
Right.
And
right.
As the emotional pro, and since our program is focused on emotions, I want to ask you to talk about what you learned from him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you want to read the story, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it'd be best to hear it from his mouth. Heart Like a Crystal, 180. Mm-hmm. Okay. But yes, and as I told you before the show started, that a very dear friend of mine who's in the book a lot, Sarah, just died yesterday, and we knew she was dying, but I felt such an emptiness, that I felt a hole. That's what I was saying to my husband last night, that, you know, I just feel a hole inside me when you lose someone that you love, I guess. And we started talking about memories, wonderful memories, and they kind of fill the hole. But we all have holes. This is called Heart Like a Crystal. I went to see a shaman, Brant Secunda. He was down home, funny, and grew up in New Jersey, my kind of shaman. So I signed up for his workshop. 3 days of teachings he learned from the Huichol Indians, a Mexican tribe that rescued him in the Sierra Madre Mountains. The young Brant had been searching for a spiritual teacher, but when he reached the jungles near Itzlan, he became lost and sun-dazed and passed out. At the same time, the revered shaman, Don Jose Matsua, had a dream in which he saw Brant coming, and he sent his clansmen to save him. Brant stayed in their village for 18 years, living with this isolated tribe that followed age-old traditions, and Don Jose adopted Brant as his grandson and taught him all he knew through an arduous 12-year apprenticeship. "He put me in a cave without water for 5 days," Brant said. "He told me, if you die, the apprenticeship is over." Then, when Don Jose died at 110, attributing his longevity to not too much sex, only once a day, he left Brant in his place to spread the Huichol wisdom. In the workshop, Brant explained that shamanism is not just a form of healing, but a way of life. He taught us how to strengthen our connection with nature, to honor and heal Mother Earth. We also learned a Huichol practice to heal our inner wounds. "Negative emotions leave holes inside you," Brant said, "but you can fill and cleanse those holes by sitting and facing the fire or sun or a candle and breathing in its light. If you're fearful, imagine opening your throat and letting in the light," he said. "If you're angry, let the light into your stomach. If you're jealous, let it into your heart. With plain talk and a modest manner, Brand spoke of amazing rituals and miracles he had seen. But what struck me most was the familiar, the common ground beneath. For under all their rituals and miracles, the Weechels were, like most people I know, simply looking for ways to deal with their emotions, connect with spirit, and become better people. I could end there, I guess. That'd be it.
Yeah, that sounds really lovely. Yeah. And that's such a simple way to just sit in front of a fire or a candle flame and let the light in to heat, to fill those holes. That's really such a simple, wonderful way of doing that.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
and I remember there was a, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. You remember
what? Yeah, there was a time in my life, and I talk about it in the book, after my marriage fell apart, and actually, you know, I had entered social work school, that I was having a lot of anxiety attacks. It was very hard. And I found that if I would sit outside on a sunny day and just open up to the sun and ask the sun, you know, just to fill me and just to feel that light coming in. So I guess I was instinctively doing what he said, you know, that I was fearful and I was letting the sun, letting the light into my throat, into my being.
That's a lovely way to do that. You know, many of our listeners have already heard this, but it bears repeating. Another way to let the light in that I discovered for dealing with fear. When I turned 50, I realized that I'd been afraid almost all my life. I couldn't remember when I wasn't afraid. And I was tired of it. And I thought, well, I'm 50 years old and I'm a therapist. I ought to be able to figure out how to deal with fear so I don't have it all the time. And at the time, I was a single parent. I was raising a couple of kids. I didn't have any backup from anybody. I had a lot of reasons to be fearful, you know.
Yes.
But I didn't want to do it anymore. And so I thought about the fact that on the earth, we have opposites like night and day and cold and hot. And I thought, well, when I'm fearful, I'm caught up in the fear. What would be the opposite of fear? And I came up with faith, not religious faith, but the kind of faith it takes to put your head down on the pillow at night and think you're going to wake up the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, if I'm afraid, I'm caught in the fear. And if I were in faith, I would not be fearful, because that's the opposite. But you can't be in both places at the same time. So how do I get from one to the other? And I came up with this plan, which fits, I think, with what you're talking about, which is I imagined that I had a written guarantee from God that whatever was happening was going to work out and I would be okay. And once I had that, then I asked myself, okay, what am I going to pay attention to? What decisions am I going to make? And what actions am I going to take now that I've got a written guarantee from God that everything's going to work out? And I started doing those things, and that was well over 20 years ago, and it's just taken fear right out of my life.
Oh, wow. No, that's beautiful. And that's inspiring. I like that written agreement.
Yeah. Well, it's not something we can ever have, you know, just like you may never know for sure whether you were a healer in ancient times or not, you know.
Right.
It's a form like you're talking about here of bringing sacred into this issue of fear and bringing light by imagining a guaranteed letter. To me, it struck me as you were talking that it's a lot like just breathing in the light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now I like that. And that reminded me of a story I have about my mother. My mother appears frequently in the book.
She sounds like quite a remarkable woman, too.
She is. She is. And, you know, and she's not perfect, and our relationship's not perfect. You know, a lot of people, I've been going to talks, and they say, oh, you have this wonderful mother, and I didn't. And I, you know, I think, look, I'm not going to write about the bad parts.
maybe one time
everyone has
write a book about that. We'll give everybody hope.
Is, But she is remarkable. I don't know if you're in the mood for another story, but I could read you the one
ahead.
About fear.
Let's do that. Yeah.
Okay. The Lord is with me, or whatever. When my mother was 80, she read a line in a hymn that she really liked. In English, it meant, "The Lord is with me. I shall not fear." And since my mother doesn't read Hebrew, she looked at its transliteration and found that to be Adonai Lila Ira. Soon she started saying it to all of us whenever we were about to fly or have surgery or felt scared in any way. "Let's say it together," she'd insist, and we'd recite along with her, Adonai Lila Ira. "The Lord is with me, I shall not fear." It kind of became our family prayer. I liked it, and I liked saying it with her, so much so that I'd call her from my cell phone each time I'd board a plane. We'd say those words together, and I'd feel a wondrous calm. Then, one day, I found that line in a prayer book, but the true transliteration was Adonai Li Velo Ira, and not Adonai Lila Ira. So, all these years, we'd been saying the wrong words, and God knows what they meant, some family prayer. I didn't want to tell Mom and get her upset. Still, I was a little annoyed by her habit of muddling up words, a habit I've inherited that annoys my daughter. So I decided that whenever we'd say it together, I'd say it correctly and loudly, thinking sooner or later she'd switch to the right words. But she didn't. I worried it wouldn't work for her. I mean, if a mantra has powers, then it helps to say the right words, no? Then I read a Zen story about a poor peasant who wandered for miles to find a master and ask for his guidance. The master asked him if he had a spiritual practice. The peasant said he had one prayer that he'd repeat all day, which he then recited for the master. "No," the master shouted, "you've got it wrong. That prayer goes like this." He taught the peasant the correct prayer and felt relieved that he helped save this poor man's soul. The peasant thanked him gratefully and walked away. But when he reached the river, he just kept on walking, walking on water as if it were land. When the master saw this, he ran after the peasant shouting, "Wait, forget what I said. Stick to your old prayer and never stop." So my mom still says Adonai Li La Ira, and now I do too. It's catchy, you know, and so is her faith.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah, there's so much humor in what you're writing. It's just delightful.
Thank you. Yeah. I come from a family of humor, and I feel there's even a story, Life, Death, and Laughter, that I feel that laughter is a huge part of living a sacred life, you know, to be able to laugh, to be able to make someone laugh, to be able to laugh together.
Yes.
That's one of the joys.
And raises the vibrations everywhere, too. I want to talk about another way, which is gardening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I lived on my grandparents' farm frequently during the summer times and for an entire year when I was 5. And since I was 20 years old and had a place of my own to live, there hasn't been a summer season that I failed to plant a garden. And I find that digging in the dirt connects me with myself and my world, and you seem to see gardening as sacred also. What is sacred about gardening to you?
I guess it's, I think you become part of creation. It's like it's a miracle that a little seed contains a cucumber or a rose, and that it happens with the sun and with the rain and with the dirt. And when you garden, you become a co-creator with nature, with God. So that's powerful. And to watch it, and then to watch it grow, and to know that you're nourishing it just like the rain and the sun are nourishing it. And I think that's a big part of it. I love when I put my hands in the earth, though, I feel literally and spiritually grounded. There's nothing more grounding than digging in the dirt. So that becomes sacred too. Mm-hmm. And then I think appreciating it. You know, we talked about when you appreciate beauty, when you appreciate a beautiful day, that you're the gratitude you feel then is connecting you to that beautiful day and to the spirit that created that day. And that happens a lot when you're gardening. You're paying attention. You know, you're seeing, oh, there's a weed over there. I'm going to get that weed out. You're saying, wow, you know, look, the morning glories are beginning to bloom. And you notice their color and how exquisite they are when the sun shines on them. And all those things just make you part of creation.
You know, as you're talking, I'm realizing one of the things that happens with gardening, too. Before I married my husband, he planted an Alberta peach tree in the yard, and this is the most prolific peach tree you've ever seen. So right now it's in full bloom. And not only do you get to enjoy the formation of the peaches and the blossoms and so forth, but when harvest time comes, there's so many peaches, you can't possibly eat them yourself. And so I find myself filling up bags of peaches and running around my neighborhood and giving people peaches.
Okay. Yes.
And so I was just thinking as you were talking, the gardening, when you have good crops and so forth, also leads you to realize how easily abundance can occur and how when you have abundance you want to share.
Right. Yes, that's great. Where do you live?
Northern California. Not
yeah.
too far from Berkeley.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to be speaking there in a couple of weeks.
Oh, nice. All right.
Great.
Let's talk about that after the show.
Okay.
So this ties in with an issue that I've read about, and you have connections, have had connections with shamans. And many shamans I have read or learned from have said that most of the ills of humans today result from the fact that we've lost our connection with nature, that we don't, you know, roll with the seasons and get out in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have comment on that?
I think what makes sense to me when you said it just had a ring of truth. I feel very grateful that I moved to Boulder, Colorado about 25 years ago because it's so easy here to walk outside and see the mountains and go for a hike. But even I lived in New York City for 25 years before then, and I would go into Central Park and wander and find amazing birds. I think there's more migrating birds in Central Park than maybe anywhere else. They go through and they find all the little ponds and the lakes. So wherever you are, you can find nature, you know, and be part of it. But it has a healing. I think, I believe that everything that was created has a lot of purposes. And we know that, you know, we couldn't breathe if it weren't for the trees. And there's a lot more that we don't know, or maybe some people know and some shamans know, but that they're healing us in different ways. And the beauty of nature in itself, I think, is tremendously healing, that it can calm me down, it can give me perspective. You know, I like when I'm not feeling great, or even if I am, I just love to go for a long walk, you know, just look at everything. And just the walking, just, you know, moving and feeling the air, or taking the garbage out at night and looking up at the stars, you know, that something, I don't know, it's like breathing in some wonderful, powerful medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And
actually,
so, yeah, yes, go on.
I was thinking, actually, it's the most wonderful, powerful medicine. It's the universe you're breathing in. It's really great.
Right. Yeah.
But
it doesn't get better than that, right?
Okay, we're up to our second break. My guest today is Rivi Neshama, who's author of Recipes for a Sacred Life. More to come on Full Power Living after this. Would you parent your child if he or she were a foreign exchange student. As a host for an exchange student, you'd have 5 main jobs to do. Those are the same 5 jobs important in raising kids. People around the world have used this approach to raise kids who are self-directed, make great decisions, and are immune to peer pressure. Get your copy of The Exchange Student Model for Parenting, written by me, Eileen Dillon, now available on Kindle. As a 41-year marriage and family therapist, a single, married, step, adoptive, and grandmother, I've got a thing or two to tell you that's going to lighten your load as a parent and help you create incredible kids who will become amazing adults. Go to Kindle.com and download The Exchange Student Model for Parenting today. We're back here on Full Power Living talking about recipes for a sacred life. True stories and a few miracles, written by Rivi Neshama. And Rivi, I wanted to talk to you about this. About 20 years ago, I met and later married a man who was brought up Jewish, and he's been kind enough to teach me a lot about his traditions. He actually had become Catholic since then because, like you had mentioned earlier in the show, he was very taken with the rituals of the Catholic Church and also attended Catholic universities. And another man who is part of my family through marriage and is one of the most loving people I have ever met was brought up in the Muslim tradition. And when you follow these traditions, or the traditions of finding the sacred in life, my observation is what they really do is keep you in mind of God, or if you will, that something larger, in as many of the minutes of your day as possible. And to me, that's what sacred is about. Is it for you?
Yes, yes. That would be one way I would define it. But it would also, I like when the Dalai Lama was asked, what's your religion? He said, my religion is very simple. My religion is kindness. And that really rings with me. You know, I think, and I guess you're doing God's work when you're kind, so you're feeling that connection. But I think sometimes I've seen some people who pray a lot and they're always aware of God, but they might meanwhile not be being as kind as they could be to all their neighbors or people who are different from them, you know. So I'd rather start with kindness. That I read a book where I think it was, it was a rabbi who said, when you're doing the work of God, that's when you're closest to God. So it's, yes, remembering God is one way, but doing the work that God wants you to do, helping others, helping the poor, you know, helping the planet, those are the things that I think bring me to a sense of the sacred.
Hmm. I just picked up your book and opened it to page 212. Will you read A Way to Dance, including a quote from Jean Houston? I think that's another comment on the sacred.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. This will be a first time for me reading this one, too. A Way to Dance. A funny thing about the spiritual is how often it's physical. It's not about leaving your body, but being fully in it. Then, with a little help from grace, your energy merges with the energy around you, and you are fully present, fully alive. For me, this alchemy happens when I deeply engage in the following. Walking, simply walking, and seeing things I never see from a car. Free dancing with the music, myself in the room, and the sky as well, coming in through the window. Making love, making love, making love. Circle dancing with the Sufis, swaying, whirling, and chanting the names of God. hiking on trails where I feel myself guided as I look for each marker painted on trees and follow that path through forests and glades until reaching the place where I first began. Dancing the Hora at Jewish weddings, all holding hands in a swirling circle as the klezmer music gets louder and faster and the bride and groom are raised high on chairs. Bicycling down country roads, passing farms and wild roses as I watch the world go by like a movie. Doing yoga, especially outdoors, when the birds are singing, a breeze is blowing, and it becomes more than ever meditation in motion. Square dancing, so fast I can feel my heart beating and my cheeks get red and hurt from smiling, faster and stamping, doing the reel so everyone dances with everyone else. Bow to your partner, bow to your corner, a way to honor each person you pass. In each of these, I feel the ecstasy of being, and each of them is a way to dance. And the quote from Jean Houston is, "To dance, then, is to pray, to meditate, to enter into communion with the larger dance, which is the universe."
That's so lovely. Well,
yes.
I think that's a lovely way to end the show.
Yes, that was fun.
Such a lovely. So let's dedicate the gentleness of this show to your friend Sarah. And I know you mention her a lot in your book, but also to all the good that she did in her life, all the people she touched, and all the learning she shared with people. Let's dedicate this program to her and thank you for bringing her with you today to when you're appearing
thank
on
you.
Full Power Living. Sure.
Yes.
So I love the way you've taken the people and experiences of your life and woven them together. They're powerful yet soft and sweet and showing us the sacred in everyday life and reminding us to keep on finding the sacred in our everyday life. So let me remind you who are listening that Rivi Neshama's book is Recipes for a Sacred Life. Her website is rivineshama.com, RIVVYNESHAMA.com. And Rivi, thank you for writing the book. Thank you for being here on Full Power Living today. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
All right.
It's been very soothing, too. Thank
Good.
You.
Good. So after a short break, we're going to be back with questions and answers on my next guest, Sonia Rechnitzer. And I urge you to call now, 888-498-0570, to secure your place so you're able to talk with Sonia as she gets answers that you certainly want to hear from your own higher self. That's 888-480-0570, and that number is listed on both of our chats. Next week, Dr. Stan Tatkin is going to be with me talking about love and war in intimate relationships. He's an expert on the neurobiology of healthy relationships, and it's a topic you do not want to miss. We're all in relationships. So that's next Thursday, March 13th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern. I certainly look forward to having you with us then. So we'll thank our producer after this message, and in the meantime, we'll get ready with a break to welcome Sonia Rechnitzer to our show. We'll be right back. You're listening to Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives.
If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us. Four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. If you have not already called in on 888-498-0570, I urge you to do that so that you secure a place and get your question answered today. Now, what we're doing next on our program, and Sonia will be with us in a couple of minutes, is something we've been doing for 5 or 6 months now. Last March on Full Power Living, I had a program which my guest was Daniel Rechnitzer, who started talking to me about how everybody lives with limiting beliefs. Now, I always make myself kind of a guinea pig, if you will. I read people's books and then I want to know how things work. So one of the things, I was taken away from my birth mother at the age of less than 3, and so I knew very little about the early part of my life, and that's when a lot of your beliefs are formed. And so there were things that were holding me back in my life, and I made myself a guinea pig and asked Daniel, can you tell me what are the beliefs that are holding me back? And to my surprise and delight, Daniel went immediately back to when I was very young, like about the age of 2, and I was being quite neglected at that time, and he just listed out 3 or 4 of the beliefs that once he said them, I knew them to be true, but nobody had been able to help me identify them before. And I was so impressed, I decided to start studying with him and have since come to know him and his lovely wife, Sonia. And just yesterday, I received my certificate for being a trained universal intelligence mentor. It's a very exciting thing. And what is very exciting is that Daniel and Sonia have brought their little family here to the U.S., and they're busy trying to share with people, everybody, everywhere, that we can all do these things. And to back that up, Sonia makes the effort to appear once a month on this program so that she can demonstrate what exactly she can do. I point out to you that before Sonia learned this method or this approach, she couldn't do what she's going to be doing for the next half hour either. But she certainly has been able to do it, and I'm learning to do it, and you could learn to do it. And that's part of what we hope you will take away from this program that we do with Sonia once a month, is that you can learn about accessing universal intelligence also. And the website to learn more about it is accessingui.com. So, I'm hearing a little scrapey sounds. Does that mean that Sonia is on the line?
Well, very close, Eileen. The next best thing.
Daniel!
Hello!
How nice! Hi! Well, we get the King Mentor himself. That's wonderful.
We thought we'd surprise you this morning just to keep everyone on their toes. And you have me today.
All right. Well, let me just tell people that you have a book available called The All-Knowing Diary, which is a bit like a home study course for helping people to open up to how accessing universal, how using the whole brain approach can open up life for all of us. So is there anything, I mean, what's new? I haven't talked to you in a long time. What's new about you that you'd like to tell the world?
Oh, wow. It's everyone asks me that, and I almost get overwhelmed at the end that wants to come out of my mouth. Well, there's so many amazing things happening. Let me just say to you and all your listeners, so thank you for having me. I think the big couple of big things, I just finished a kid's book, which is teaching kids we've come to call their invisible superhero. So the new kids book is going to be coming out, which is very exciting, and it actually teaches them how to connect to universal intelligence.
Oh,
so that's
wow.
A big thing I don't think you know about.
Yes, I don't. And
so we'll have some
what
you
I
a
am
copy.
Yes, I'd love that. But what I am impressed with, people should know how many things you and Sonia are able to accomplish, and part of it is because you're working with universal intelligence. So, Daniel, I want to talk with you more, and maybe we'll be able to catch up. But we've got two people with questions here. So I'm going to start with Jeannie and then move to Rennie. All right?
Sure.
Okay, Jeannie, are you on the line?
Hi, Dr. Eileen.
Hi.
Hi. I have, my husband, I think, is living a double life. And I'm not sure what I need to do, or should I let it ride, or what?
Very good question. I'll look for you, and let me just see what the answers that come up. Just sex. As we'll just create space for the answers here. There's a couple of messages that are coming up. One is it feels messages that there's about 50% paranoia and about 50% proof. You can make a bit easy and go, it's not as bad.
I'm sorry, did you say paranoia and needy?
Yeah, Daniel, you're breaking up. I'm trying to work with producer Paul, too.
Let me see if I can. I've got good reception here, so let me see if moving around is going to help guys. Bear with me, too. All right, how did this. Is this. If I'm here, is that a bit better?
So far, that's much better. Is it for you also,
yeah.
Jeannie? Yeah, good.
Yeah.
All right. Say it again,
right.
Then, Daniel, please.
My apologies there. All right, so Jeannie, the message that's coming through is there's about 50% paranoia and about 50% truth. So the good news is that things aren't as bad as that you're fearing.
Okay.
But what is coming up is that there are some things that you need to look at. There's some things that you're, to say the least, disappointed in. That needs to be addressed. And it's not something to let ride. Because it feels to me at this point in your relationship and in your life, to let something like that ride will cause illness in your body that you do not want.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So, that's the really key thing. The next message that comes up is not to be afraid of facing this disappointment because it's not yours. It's not something that you've neglected or been remiss about. It is actually something that needed to be addressed way back with the partner that hasn't been. It's kind of something that he's turned a blind eye to and hope that you have done the same.
So I have to address the disappointment and not be afraid of it.
Exactly. So that's the key messages. Now, it feels like if you've got some specific questions, then we can go a little bit deeper.
Okay. Is this something that I need, is this a relationship I need to leave or hang in there and work on?
Okay, it's a little bit of both. What's coming through is that ultimately, yes, that your true self, your higher self, if you like, would like you to leave the relationship because it's no longer providing sustenance. It's no longer providing the love and support that it had the potential to. But before we go there, if you were just to leave this, you're likely to attract something very similar in or even something worse. So what needs to happen in order to prevent that is this is the disappointment needs to be addressed. And this is why this is coming up, because once that's resolved within you, there's this feeling that I keep getting of this is all my fault, I ruin everything, and so on and so forth. If that's not resolved, if you don't see the truth behind that, then you'll bring in another partner that validates that or creates the same experience all over again. Does that make sense?
Right. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, boy. This is very good. I don't want to take up much more time. I got a lot to digest here. Thank you so much. You know, you affirmed what I was kind of slowly getting to anyway.
Thank you so much for your call, Jeannie.
Thank you, Eileen, forevermore.
And thank you, Dan. Bye.
Bye, Dan.
DG.
Thank you.
So, Daniel, that was lovely. It's so wonderful to listen how people just melt and you know, it's like when you're talking about what's really so, they just get it. I have on the chat, Rennie has asked, I would like to hear what Daniel thinks is holding me back from being my fullest self.
This is Rennie, and I am on the line now. I was having a hard time getting in before, but I got in.
Okay, great. Well, I'll leave the two of you to talk then.
Okay. Well, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
The big thing that goes up is,
now, you are breaking up, Daniel. Can you find another spot? I'm sorry.
Oh, I got almost full bars here. Let me. All right, tell me, how about now? Is now
yes,
any better?
It's sounding better, yes.
Okay, so the more uncomfortable I am, the better the reception on the phone. I'm now standing in the middle of the room. Okay. This happens with my nine-month-old baby. The more uncomfortable I am, the more easy it is to go to sleep. Okay, I can work with this. All right, we're coming back to Rennie. Rennie, the very first shows up. It's a theme. It's called self-love. That's the biggest thing holding you back. Now, what it's showing up as is this, am I worthy? Am I good enough for the wonderful things that I want in my life? What are people going to say? Are people going to judge? Are people going to criticize? And that's the biggest thing, is this self-consciousness around, am I ready? Am I deserving? Because it feels to me you've had a lot of scorning in your life. People have cut you down at pretty much any given opportunity as you started to put a on your face or as you started to find happiness. Does that make sense?
Yeah. One of the things that I find is how does one hold on to one's sense of self in the midst of the other masses in conjunction with other people? I mean, one can maybe find one's sense of oneself or one's essence in isolation, but then out in the big wide world and interacting with all the powers that be and all the reactiveness.
I understand a very profound question. Answer it like this. People or anything on the outside are only able to affect us when we're carrying them with us. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. We are ensconced in an identity or a reality that we call our belief systems. Now, these belief systems, as an example, are things like, I need other people's approval, I need other people's validation. Are other people doing the same things as me, and that has me feel good? Beliefs like, I need other people's support. These are the beliefs that I'm getting from you, Rennie, okay? That's what's sitting in your subconscious. Now, as we bring those beliefs wherever we are, because that's what we believe, then we bring all the opposition wherever we go. So the opposition is not outside, it's seen, because that's what we're attracting in. But the outside is simply mirroring what we've got on the inside. So as we learn to clear each of these beliefs by recognizing the truth within them, and this is what we teach people how to do, as you learn to see the truth, all of a sudden, that opposition that we're so accustomed to actually stops occurring in our lives. And it's not so much that we stop noticing it, it actually stops happening. And if I may, Rennie, just tell a quick story here, is that when we first started teaching our universal intelligence workshops back in Australia about 5, 6, 7 years ago, invariably, in every workshop, there would be someone there that challenged me, someone that wanted to question everything that I would say. And this became immensely frustrating for me. I cannot even begin to tell you. I'm sure you know all about it. And what I realized was that I was still carrying my mother with me. Wherever I went, I was carrying the belief that I needed to convince my mother that I knew what I was talking about. So her energy was constantly around me. The belief that I had was mother's approval. Now, I learned how to clear that, and it took a while for me because that's one of the things to deal with in my life. No one challenges me anymore. It's that very belief that we walk around with that it's funny. It's almost like the belief picks a fight with people around us. So what we're holding in our own energy, our own belief system, is bringing people in to that. Does that...
Yeah. I guess I just don't know how one clears out and vanquishes old belief systems, and one does need approval from outside on some level, but it sounds like what you're saying is that approval comes when one can vanquish old belief systems.
What happens is you no longer need approval from outside when you vanquish old belief systems. You get to see all you're ultimately looking for is your own approval. It just occurs.
Yeah, but I would venture, just to play devil's advocate, that you do need approval from outside in order for you to be doing your work, because that's or maybe you don't need it. Maybe it just comes by virtue of not needing it. I don't know.
Very, very good. The minute you become unattached to needing it, all of a sudden you're surrounded by it.
Right.
Now,
what's
very important to realize is all this is about is each one of us walking our own truth, not getting anyone else's approval, not getting anyone else's validation. Because what happens is our own truth is truth. Now, truth resonates with people on such a profound level that when we walk that, we attract those people who are also wanting to resonate at that level. So as I
and
said,
how do,
as you... Sorry, go ahead.
And how do each of us, how do each of us find, filter out, connect with our own true resonance, our own true essence, our own true being, and let that blaze within the context of what's around?
Beautiful. Now, I have a very, very simple answer to that. We have just put on our website a free workbook that connects to your own self.
And that is an active
thought. Okay, you're cutting out completely again. I did not catch that. On your website, there's something, and then...
On our website, can you guys hear me? Am I here?
Now we can.
Oh, good. I'm doing the splits right now. I
was going to ask you, are you more uncomfortable?
That's it. I'm contorting myself. Website is accessinguI.com, and there is a workshop on there that we used to charge people money for, and now we've made available. It teaches everyone how to connect to their higher self, to universal intelligence, to connect to what's your own truth.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for calling in, Rennie.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, that's a real, you know, you remind me, Daniel, that I interviewed a man, David Ord, who wrote a book about Jesus, and he said that if you were Jesus's friend, you wouldn't find him coming to you and asking you, do you think this is right for me? Which decision do you think I ought to make? Because he was so good at consulting his higher self or God or his intuition, however we want to talk about it. So we have a patiently waiting Genevieve, who is calling from France. So can we put her on next? Yes. Hi, Genevieve.
Hi. Hi, Aileen. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Genevieve.
Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, we can.
My question is also about beliefs. I am intent on clearing blocks that prevent me from having a two-way dialogue with my higher self. And my question is there a deeply rooted unconscious fear or belief that needs to be cleared? I've been doing the exercises in Daniel's book. So can my higher self show me her perspective and share her insights about that? Thank you.
Okay, so I only got, I'm going to tell you with this as well. It was a little bit muffled on my end. I think Genevieve now needs to do some.
can I clarify it for you?
Yes.
Okay, my understanding is she's very intent on clearing blocks. She's been reading the All-Knowing Diary, and she is questioning whether there's a deeply rooted unconscious belief that she hasn't seen yet that you can help her with.
Great, great. Is that right, Genevieve? Was that right?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Your conversation with your higher self.
Okay, now you're breaking up again, Daniel.
I'll get back in the splits. Hang on. Okay. am I good yet?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. All right, great. Let's see what your higher self.
Nope, it's not working. The splits are not doing it.
All right, handstand. I'm moving into handstand position. Can you see it?
Now I can. I hope that holds.
Oh, okay, good. I can hold this space without losing consciousness. The first thing that comes up is there's a lack of trust. There's a feeling of that she's almost expecting, Genevieve, it's like you're expecting your higher self to be loud and vivacious and very obvious, very apparent. She's saying, I'm soft and I'm subtle. I don't make noises. I don't wave you down to get your attention. I wait for your open until you're ready, until you're receptive. The first message. You understand?
Okay, I can't hear either of you. Genevieve, do you understand that he's saying what he's saying about your higher self?
Oh, Daniel's voice is, you know, breaking. I got just part of it.
Okay, let me be the mid person. As I understand it, he's saying that you have an expectation that your higher self is going to call more attention to herself and be louder and vivacious, and that she's very soft and subtle. So the first thing she wants to tell you is that
you need to be listening for soft and subtle and not looking for loud and vivacious.
Oh, great. I see. Okay. Thank you.
That's the first thing. She's saying there's a trust issue, and that is that, you know, when you go into this space, you need to trust that you are already there without hearing the big bangs and the burning bush and all of these things. It's like when you go in that space, you've cleared your ego, you're now in your higher self space, you just now need to trust that you're there, because she isn't going to say anything until you're trusting that you're there.
Okay.
You can't understand the realm of ourselves in nearly every way, the opposite of what we're all used to. And by that I mean, we're used to, you know, when we do sports or when we do academia or any of these things, like, when I see it, I'll trust it. Right? When I see it, I'll believe it. But the higher self is like, no. That's not how I operate. When you trust in yourself, that's what makes the seeing of your higher self possible. We need to see it. You know, we need to have that trust and the belief in order to see it, in order to hear it.
So you're talking, Daniel, about the development of self-belief, the having faith that if you put your intention to connecting with your higher self, then you are in fact doing it, and then listen from that place. Am I understanding that correctly?
You're understanding it correctly. As long as you've cleared and you've followed, you need to come into that with, if I do these steps, I am already there. I am there. And maybe one day, maybe she'll communicate with feelings, with words, with pictures. Maybe she just wants me to sit in a space of trust, which is what she's saying to me now. She'd like that your next session, just to be in that space, you guys are in an embrace without any options to validate that you're
The last sentence or two, Daniel, we lost. I don't know if you stopped standing on your hands or what.
I'll move it back to my other position. Downward dog, let's go. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. What I was saying is the next time you guys go through those exercises, she wants you to just be with her, knowing that you're in an embrace with her, in a complete space, trusting she is embracing you without the need to ask questions to verify that she's actually there. Did you get that?
Beautiful. Yes. Yes, I did.
Beautiful. That's what.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Genevieve.
Thank you for calling, Genevieve. It's nice to hear from you again.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank you, Ivan.
Sure. All right. Well, yes. Oh, Janine. It's Janine who's there. So we have another call.
Hi,
we have another caller, Daniel, and it's Janine, and she's sick. So let me just give you a little bit of the background here, Janine, and then you can ask your question. I'm told that you're visiting your daughter and granddaughter in Atlanta, and that you're now sick, and this happens almost every time you travel to see them, and you want to know what is the illness and what can you do about it. Is that correct?
Thank you, Eileen. That's exactly what I wanted to know.
Okay, that's thank you to Dakey also, who put it out there for me.
And to Dakey.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, Daniel, can you help poor Janine?
Okay. What's showing up, Janine? Let me have a good look for you, because there are a couple of things that were coming to me as talking. What shows up is
daughter and your grandchild, it's guilt and regret. Now, this is pretty subtle stuff, but what I'm seeing is actually inspiring in the background is, I wish I was a... Can you guys hear me?
No, I can't really. Janine, do you have music on in the background? Or is that a...
Unfortunately, I'm in a restaurant, and I'm in the quietest place I can be, and I've put a shawl over my head to try to drown it out.
Okay, we'll give it a try then. All right, so Daniel, you're saying that the first thing regarding her daughter and granddaughter is guilt and regret? Hopefully,
yes, there's guilt and regret.
Which is absolutely true.
Yeah, it's what's showing up is, I wish I was a better parent when my daughter was young. And what
yes.
your body is trying to say to you is, whoa, 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 look at the amazing daughter you've created. Now she's so amazing. She's created a child of her own. And look how well the child's flourishing. Be present to that. That is your accomplishment.
Oh, that's great to hear. Thank you.
You're welcome. Your body is saying, we don't want any more regrets like missing out on being present to the grandchild. So be present now and savor every moment knowing you created this. This is your legacy. Daughter, your revel in that. The most amazing creation of your life.
She is the center of my universe. As was my daughter, but we had complications and got separated.
Well,
and I can't get over it.
Well, look, we can definitely get you do some work with you with one of our mentors on after the call, but the message right now is, look at them both in the eye, and you will see you did nothing wrong, and you will see the beauty and the love that is in these two people for you, and that's where you're going to get, oh, I can continue and regret this just my life, or I can love and appreciate the love and see the creations that I am a part of.
I'm ready to do this, Daniel. I want to do this.
Great.
I'll be right there, honey. I am so ready to do it.
Okay. You know how to get in contact with me or with Dakey. Either one of us can help you on this, Janine, if you want to do more on it. Okay?
I do, and I will, and I thank you so much.
That is a great
beautiful.
Eileen is such a fantastic
appreciate
mentor
it very much, Daniel.
As Dakey, and they're the perfect people to help you with this.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Happy healing.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. Great job, Daniel. I love your downward dog pose. It seems to be working.
I'm glad. I was worried I was going to have to get into worry. I don't know if the hamstrings were going to hold out for that whole time. So I'm glad we did all right.
Right. Well, our time is up, and this has actually been quite a feast. I do want to call people's attention to the website that you've already given, which is accessingui.com. That's for Accessing Universal Intelligence, accessingui.com. There are lots of workshops on that site. There are free lessons that people can get that you've put up there. And for those of you who are listening in Hawaii, Daniel and Sonia are going to be coming to Hawaii. When is that? April?
Yeah, mid-April.
Mid-April. All right. And if you would like to have a discount, if you're in Hawaii and you want to attend the workshop and you want to have a discount, contact me, Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, at accessingui.com, and send me your name and phone number, and I can give you details on how you can get a significant discount also.
Wow.
So, you have more you want to say about that, Daniel?
We hope we can come and have you come and meet us in Hawaii, and if not, we're going to be back. You know, we're running season. Then later in the year, we're doing a tour around Australia, teaching workshops there as well. So those of you who've always wanted to come to Australia and see the natural beauty that is in abundance in Australia, then lots of things are happening there. So come to our website at Accessing UI.
Great.
All our happenings.
Great. Yeah, so there's so much, you know, like you told me about this children's book today. It's amazing when you follow and work hand in hand with your higher self, as you've been encouraging people to do here on the show. It's just amazing what you can accomplish, what you're drawn to do, the kinds of fulfillment that is available to you. And that's one of the things I have really, really valued in studying with you and Sonia, Daniel. And I want to thank you for that in my life, too.
And you're welcome.
All right. So you've been listening to the incredible Daniel Rechnitzer, who is author of The All-Knowing Diary, The Truths You Were Never Told. And he talks to you about how to harness all knowing and to make the right decisions every time. And you've gotten a good example of that. Either Daniel or Sonia, we've had Sonia till now, will be returning for a full hour on April 3rd, and we also have May 15th set up so that you can look forward to, and anybody that you know who has pain in their life that they'd like to get beyond or they'd like to feel more loving and full, have them come for these future shows and get answers from their own higher self. Daniel, thank you so much for coming today. It's been a delight having you.
Oh, Eileen, thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure, and lots of love to you and to Daiki and to all your listeners. And we'll talk to everyone again soon.
All right. Take our love back to Sonia. Tell her thanks for sending such a wonderful stand-in.
I sure appreciate that. See you guys. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. So remember that next week I'm exploring with Stan Tatkin, who's a renowned couples therapist, how it is that love can turn into war in our partnerships and marriages. We look forward to having you with us again. Paul Johnson of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer. Thank you, Paul. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.